Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, April 11th, 2018. And with me today, Kelly Gaumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I am good. It's great to have you here. And Andrew Orr, I'm so glad you're here today. How are you?
I'm glad I'm here, too. I'm doing pretty good.
Awesome. It is great to have both of you here. And I'm thinking we should just jump right into some topics. So, and I say some topics because I'm making the bold assumption I'll be able to keep the conversation under control enough that we have more than one. Unless you guys really entertain me, then we may only have one topic today. We'll see. So, Andrew, yesterday you covered the news that there's this web API thing that's coming that has an impact on passwords.
Yeah.
So tell me about this. And I'm also curious how this is going to potentially impact Apple.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out too. So the new web API is called WebAuthn, and it's the FIDO Alliance and W3C are trying to make this a new standard for browsers so that people have an alternative to passwords. So basically, it will bring biometrics to the web. So you can, if your computer has, or a phone has, you know, a fingerprint sensor or facial recognition, this standard will be able to hopefully eventually replace passwords.
Okay, so then at that point, you'd be using your biometrics as like a universal passcode? Or, well, that yeah. wouldn't be a fair way to say it, I'm guessing. A universal authentication system.
Yeah, that's more correct. So, I mean, right now, they're saying that this can be used either with a password or replace it. So I'm assuming right now the people who make the browsers will just have it as sort of a backup, like how Touch ID works right now. Because even if you use Touch ID or Face ID, you still need a traditional text password.
Right. Oh, okay. So, so when you're using this, you wouldn't even have a separate password. So having tools like 1Password in this instance wouldn't be necessary because you don't need something to keep track of all your passwords that you're then using a biometric system, your fingerprint or Face ID, to unlock the 1Password database and then fill in the password for you. This is just simply you authenticate with the biometric thing, and it's like, yep, that's you, you're in.
Yeah, so instead of it authenticating a password, what it sounded like is it would authenticate some kind of encrypted token. So okay. I did a bunch of research. I'm still not exactly sure how it works, but Google and Microsoft and Opera are already planning to add support for it. Safari is still kind of an unknown, but it sounds like it might eventually come to Safari.
All right. So, Kelly, you have quite a history with with passwords and security.
Yeah.
What's your take on this?
Well, partly because I also, like Andrew, I don't know the actual mechanics of what's going to make this truly like what the nuts and bolts are of that transaction. So, you know, if you sit down in front of a browser and you need to log in to the bank, for example, and this is the method that you're using, I don't know what you have to do and what the browser does in exchange in order for that to work. Short of that, I feel like, this is less about what this authentication system can do for Apple and more about what Apple has already done for this authentication system, because Apple has sort of started to lead the way in educating people on using something besides a password or a passcode, because you can set one up on your phone, but you unlock it with your thumb or you unlock it with your face, and you use the same authentication method for Apple Pay. So if you bonk your phone on a thing, you know, at Walgreens to pay for stuff, or you bonk your watch at the place where you buy stuff, and, you know, it's pretty great because you can live in the future by just waving your arm near the thing and then you've paid. I feel like Apple has done a lot to sort of educate people about different ways to authenticate yourself that are not enter some sort of text, whether it's letters or numbers, into a field and hit return and wait for it to come back and tell you that was right. And so I think overall what is going to happen is that whatever this standard actually looks like, once we see it in practice, as long as it's not something super onerous, it's going to be something where Apple led the way. So people are going to talk about it like, oh, you know, it's like Face ID, but it's for your browser on your laptop, or, you know, something like that. So I'm very curious to see more about this and how it works. And I'm also sort of glad to see that people are rethinking passwords, because I'm sure everyone on this show, everyone listening to this show, has some sort of ridiculous password requirement that they bump up against on a daily or a multiple times weekly basis, whether it's the bank says you need a secure password, but they won't take any more than 8 characters, or, you know, things like that. So I think a lot of people know that sort of standard issue rules around passwords are sometimes ridiculous and generally breakable. And doing more things like this, where you can authenticate without having to have some sort of passcode, like 2-factor is a thing that a lot of people know about. That's like one of the first stabs at making your stuff a little bit better protected against people who are not you, but still want your stuff. So I'm hoping that maybe something like this will help lead the charge. And whether or not this is a great implementation or a flawed implementation, maybe it will spur someone else to create another implementation, and eventually we'll get some innovation in this space and people will actually be able to log in, and we're gonna have to put air quotes around that at some point, whatever shape that takes, and have all of their data be more secure than it is now, which is a thing that I would be 100% for.
All right, so here's the thing that I'm guessing at least some of our listeners are wondering, and I know we don't have the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyhow, and maybe we can kind of talk around it a little bit, see if we can figure out what impact this could have. Is this hackable? And if so, what does that do for your biometric signature, so to speak? Does that mean someone could potentially mimic your fingerprint and then log in as you?
I mean, first, I guess you could say that anything is hackable, but I'm hoping that maybe we'll have specialized hardware that can back this up, like how Apple does with the Secure Enclave. Mm-hmm. So you're maybe in the future, it won't just be browser-based, it'll be hardware-based, so that there's going to be a special chip in your laptop that will hold your fingerprint data or face data, which won't leave your machine. I mean, that's what I'm hoping. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's that's what I'm hoping as well, because the idea of using something that's not secure, and to be clear, I'm not implying that that's the case here, but I, you know, it's a concern. Is this stuff secure? Is my fingerprint? Is my facial scan? Is my iris or retina scan? Any of these things, are they going to be secure, so that no one can find a way to use them without me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I forgot to mention earlier that it's not just biometrics. So this API also works with USB keys, which is a whole nother type of authentication. Mm-hmm. And that is, I'm thinking maybe that one will be a bit more secure. To your question, Jeff, just because that USB key would act as that piece of hardware, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, it's I'm really interested to see how this plays out, because I like the idea of having a secure system that for authenticating for website logins that doesn't involve me having to maintain a massive database of passwords.
Yeah.
And then have those get exposed because some company can't figure out how to keep passwords secure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge issue, because, you know, like, one of the things that you know, all of us, and probably again everyone listening, grew up sort of taking for granted, was your social security number is safe. And basically it's not anymore. So it's like, you know, that's not necessarily a unique identifier, like all that stuff that we sort of knew to be secure and reliable pieces of information, you know, are completely incorrect. And, you know, it's gotten to the point where you have to start making up answers to those security questions. And remember that no one's going to verify what street you lived on in third grade, you know, so make something up so that it's not easily scrapable information. And then, you know, you have to keep note of all of that information. Like, what fake information did I give all these other places? Because that's not my mom's maiden name, and that's not the street I lived on, and, you know, that wasn't the name of my first pet or whatever. So, mm-hmm. like, having to game the system that is supposed to be there so people can't game the system is super frustrating. And, like, the one thing I can take from this, regardless of how great, how much support this gets, how much momentum it builds, is that people are thinking about it, and people are trying to find better ways to keep my stuff secure, and I'm for that.
Yeah. Me too. All right, so the other thing I want to talk about, holy crap, I was able to do it. I was able to get a second topic in today. Holy crap.
Hey.
So Apple, they just landed a deal to turn Isaac Asimov's Foundation series, you know, so it's a bunch of books, into a TV series. And first off, I'm curious, how do you guys feel about Foundation becoming a TV series? And then second, what does this say about Apple's commitment, or how do you perceive Apple's commitment to original content?
You know, despite me being a science fiction fan, I haven't actually read the series, but I'm still looking forward to seeing it in television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So here's my thing with series, with Asimov's books from that era. And it's that they, even though they give you this amazing look at what the future could be, they're also very rooted in their time. So there's a lot that Asimov wrote that I feel is very sexist and in some ways degrading to women. But I don't think it's like he was intent on that specifically. It's just we're all products of our culture and our society, and that's kind of what mm-hmm. things were back then. So it'll be interesting to see how things are presented in the series, and will they keep elements like that or not? And some of the elements, it's easy to not keep, because it's almost like Asimov's observations about people, and it's not necessary for the story.
Okay. So sort of like, almost like a commentary.
Yeah, in some ways, it's almost like a commentary. Yeah. So, Kelly, how about you?
Basically, most of what you said. Like, I do have a vague remembrance of reading them many years ago, and sort of feeling like it was sci-fi that wasn't written with the intent of people enjoying it. It was like for guys to enjoy. And I remember sort of being left flat by it. Like, I really, you know, I love science fiction. I've read stuff I won't admit in public to reading, because it was science fiction-y and it seemed like a thing that would be fun. And these,
like,
I was not...
Battlefield Earth? You don't have to admit to reading that. I'll go ahead and admit to it. And actually, I'm totally going to derail us for a second.
Okay.
So, Battlefield Earth. I picked up the book because it had what at the time seemed like an exciting cover to me. And I read the book and I get to the end. I'm like, that was a really big book where I'm not sure if anything really happened. And then my dad's like, what have you been reading? And I show him and he's like, L. Ron Hubbard. And he just starts laughing. Turns out L. Ron Hubbard hated my dad personally. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah. L. Ron Hubbard had this, you know, there's the whole thing with Dianetics and the dietary supplements and stuff. And my dad worked for the Food and Drug Administration at the time, and the facility where a lot of this stuff was being handled was in my dad's jurisdiction. So he would have to go and do periodic checks, and it never went well because there are just all kinds of violations at the time. And and L. Ron Hubbard would sometimes be there and just scream and anyhow.
Oh boy. Yeah, I can imagine that.
So Dad just thought it was really funny that I was reading a book that L. Ron Hubbard wrote, and he asked me what I thought of it, and I was like, meh. And he thought that was about right. Anyhow, I'm sorry, that was so
funny.
Completely irrelevant.
But and, great story.
Yeah.
So I can't begrudge you that. Here's the thing that about it to me is that, and again, you know, this is my own personal take on it. I remember having read them. I remember not being like interested by, you know, and I don't even know. I know it's a series and I don't remember how many books there even were, because I don't remember. And so part of it is that either is one of two things will happen. Either A, they will stay faithful to the book, which will bum me out, because like I said, I didn't really like them. And second of all, the other thing that they could do is turn it into something really interesting. Because remember, like the latest, whether you like it or not, the latest iteration of Battlestar Galactica was a riff on the original Battlestar Galactica from television. And like I'm limiting to the TV shows here. So the new one was a riff on the old one. It was a very different show, but it was still Battlestar Galactica. It was the same characters, it was the same universe, it was the same enemy. And the way they went about it was very different and interesting to me. I liked the old one, I like the new one. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like if Apple can put this show in the right hands and get somebody who's going to do something really interesting with it, because, you know, because of the commentary about people and human relationships and the parts of that that are sort of interesting, then maybe we'll get a good show out of this. But in the meantime, like initially, I feel like this is a show that's going to have to work a little to win me over, because it wasn't a thing that I was super jazzed about as a book, so I'm not super jazzed about it as a TV show. You know, if you're going to tell me that they picked up some Stephen King property and they're going to turn that into a TV show, like a specific book, you know, just one of them, you know, not Dark Tower or anything like that, but, you know, we're going to pick up Needful Things. We're going to pick up, you know, one specific unit of Stephen King's work or of Joe Hill's work and take that and run with it. I would freak out. I would just, my entire reaction would just be squeeing if it was like, hey, Apple Music is going to make a Nosferatu series from the Joe Hill book. I am going to freak out, and I'm going to be super excited to see it. It's going to be the best thing. As books, these left me cold, so I'm not super excited about it in the first place. I have to hear more about it besides the headline that Apple's doing this before I can be excited about it, because as it is, it's not for me.
All right. Well, we're pretty much out of time, but I'm going to ask both of you, does this feel to you like Apple committing to having potentially quality programming, or is this just a grab to have another show in the stable for when they roll out?
I mean, right now it seems like they're committed to trying to have quality stuff. Just because they've have a lot of big names working for them. So right now I'm optimistic.
And Kelly, how about you?
Well, it's, I mean, one of the things Andrew said, it's also a lot of names. We've heard a lot of people associated with the kind of content that, Apple wants to put out. So I'm hoping that it's a quality programming push. You know, like in one way, you could probably spin this as Apple is finally catering to its customer base. Apple knows that a lot of people who are super fans of Apple are nerds, and nerds like science fiction. So we went and got some science fiction for you.
Yep, they also have the Ronald D. Moore series.
Right. And so, like, maybe this is that. So, you know, people who say that Apple doesn't listen to their customers, like, here's a couple things that maybe point the opposite direction of that. So, I want it to be great. I haven't heard anything about who's involved in the nuts and bolts of it yet. So maybe at that point, if I can, if I get a little bit more information, it'll be a little more exciting. But in the short term, I'm still adopting a wait and see. But I'm hoping that this is Apple moving in the right direction, and that this isn't one of those we're just going to throw everything at the wall, and there's going to be, like, you know, 20 series that all drop in like 2 months, just, you know, to get people to stay. So,
yeah, I don't think that's how it's going to play out. I think they're going to release, you know, a couple series at a time and build up, and they're not just going to do this massive programming dump on us all at once. And I'm feeling like Apple is really trying to come up with a powerhouse collection of shows. They really want to go head to head with the stuff that Netflix, HBO, Amazon, well, and now Hulu are doing. And they want to be a serious contender in mm-hmm. the original content space. And it's going to be so weird when we have Emmy Awards going out, and Apple is now winning Emmy Awards, you know, just like well, Netflix and Amazon.
I think there's a fine line between we have a solid stable of content with a wide variety, and we're desperate for eyeballs. And I hope they stay on this side of the line and not that side of the line. Look at us! Look at us! Look what, you know.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's sort of where that's the part I'm worried about, is that that's where it's going to end up. You know, look at us. Look at all the stuff we have. And not that any of it's particularly great, but there's just so much of it. So,
yeah. And I'm going to wrap us up by saying, I've been thinking about who I would like to see as the primary writer for that series. And I'm really torn between Joss Whedon and Gail Simone. Just saying.
Gail Simone.
Oh. Yeah, that'd be... Oh, man. Yeah, I think Gail could rock the Foundation series.
Okay, if you give Gail... If someone... I know it's not up to you or me, but if someone gave Gail Simone the Foundation series, then yes, I would have that same, I cannot wait, I cannot wait, I'm going to watch this so hard reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. All right. Well, Apple... I hope you're listening, and I hope you give Gail a call, please. All right. Well, we are out of time, so we have to wrap up. Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Andrew, thank you for being here as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And listeners, I am so glad that you were here today. Thank you for listening. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.